Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life.
Who are you? Let me just ask you that again. Who are you? In your industry, a bozo on the bus just like the rest of us? Are you a seeker? Do you know that you are a spark of God? Of a good relationship with intentions and goals is keeping in mind that the primary aim of setting and working towards those goals is to feel the way you want to feel. The external things we want to have and do and experience, those are your secondary goals, all of which will get you back to the whole cosmic point, experiencing your core desired feelings. Underpinning of manifestation.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to America Meditating Radio. That was our friend Daniel Laporte on Monique's Rhodes album, Heartbeat. You tuned into America Meditating Radio, and I'm your host, Sister Jenna. And we're looking at a new year with perhaps the most optimistic approach maybe we've ever entered into, only because things are so complicated. And if we feed into the complication, then we could lose a lot of our joy. I don't know if you recall when we were younger, and I'm speaking maybe to a specific audience, but when we were really young, it was like my definition of my happiness being in check would have been who I was dating, the car I was driving, the clothes I was wearing, how my face looked. God forbid I got a pimple right before a party. And, you know, just basically external aspects and thinking even about my career in the future. And so I think as we develop maturity and begin to understand that even if we acquire those things, there's still something that's missing. And if we find ourselves in a very dependent state, we might find that sorrow increases if I don't have the things that I tend to be dependent on or for. You know, happiness is not dependent or anything or anyone. You know, we keep delaying our happiness until we might feel that things are just right, just perfect. There's an idea, there's an image, there's a person. It emerges in our consciousness, in our minds. We even tell our friends about it. We might even journal about it. We might even find ourselves moving towards that vibrational frequency. But I think happiness is only possible when we're able to accept everyone as they are at every moment and in every situation. But more importantly, happiness is so pivotal in our ability to accept ourselves with where we are, with what we've been through. And I was thinking about the current times where a lot of things that we've held in secret, in which if the world came to know about it, there'd be a sense of shame. And the list is long. It could be from beginning from your gender orientation, wondering how you were going to tell your parents that, you know, you are attracted to the same sex. It could be the fact that you stole something and maybe you were caught and your record is there. It could be that you'd hurt someone really, really bad and you think they're not going to say anything about it, or you have forgotten it to some extent, but in your quiet moments, it emerges. In other words, there are things that are sitting in the soul where we went against the moral fiber of the character. And I believe that if we don't address it, our happiness will take much longer to surface, because it's that area in the soul in which we haven't repaired, we haven't investigated truthfully enough to say, you know, I wish I knew better. That wasn't right. And even with this, you know, all the sexual harassment cases that are coming up with men in positions of power, I sometimes wonder, and please know I'm a supporter of all people trying to find their way through the light. I believe since we are walking around with so many cracks, the light must be coming in somewhere, somehow. But I wonder, for the men who have stopped doing that, or the men who no longer do that, if they've had their watershed moment where they've kind of like, God, you know, I wish I could have erased that. It's just a question that I ask, because, you know, my heart went out to Matt Lauer, to Russell Simmons, who I really appreciate so much. And now there are more cases that are surfacing more and more of individuals in a particular period that were violated. And so, you know, I just wonder about the mindset of those individuals. That's what I'm saying. That, you know, are they having those moments where they need to come forward and say, I just didn't know better. I just didn't know better. It's just not what we were taught. It's just not what we read about. It just wasn't in our framing. And I wonder what that would be in terms of turnaround, not only for their own personal happiness, but also for the happiness of the country and the world. The changes are so rapid that it's hard to attach ourselves to one specific issue that we wish to take care of. But each of us are walking around with something inside of ourselves that is a personal area that needs healing. There's something that we've all been through or we've done, and the soul says, I need you to be honest, and I need you to be truthful, to address this, or if I can't release, I can't be released from within your being so that your joy, your happiness can surface. And, you know, I'm going to talk about God, not in a religious context, but this energy of God that seems to be the call of the time. And I'm not talking about a geographical God, a linguistic one. I don't care about any of that. I never have. My dad was Hindu, my mother was Roman Catholic, and I grew up on the fence, just looking at both dimensions, realizing how it was an interpretation in which we carried in ourselves about God. It wasn't a competition about which religion carried the authority of being the leaders of having God's attention on them. But I do believe that if I'm honest and truthful, and if I take moments every day to be reflective, to be introspective, to be quiet, you can call it to meditate, God will come through those cracks and will start to heal me and put things together. And I'll be courageous enough to address my issues of shame that I don't want the world to know, but I need to know. I need to know those areas within my being that I have to fix. And we always say it's human conflict that makes us feel sad. But at the core of happiness is its acceptance and understanding of ourselves, so that from that understanding, we can be honest enough to speak our truth to power. And I mean that with all my heart, because it can sometimes go against the norms. You know, you might be in a marriage, you might be at a job, you might be in a religion, you might be in a tribe of friends. And what you're about, what you're feeling, doesn't necessarily match what they all believe in or what they want. And so you stay quiet. You silence yourself. You mute your personality. And so to me, that's muting your happiness. So it's not like physical success or playing the game of delusion that's going to bring our happiness. I really believe it's an honest, authentic, and truthful conversation that we must have with ourselves. Stay tuned. We're going to have a wonderful conversation with Michelle Galen, and she was a national CBS News anchor turned positive psychology researcher. Don't you love that? And I'm looking forward to hearing what Gail's going to be sharing. What Michelle's going to be sharing with us right after this meditation from Just a Minute Meditation with Sister Genty. Here's Relaxing My Mind.
Relaxing My Mind. Taking just a minute, I sit comfortably relaxed, inviting my senses to relax, meeting them as friends, appreciating the work they do. I now choose to give them a break. I imagine closing the motorways of my senses. My thoughts begin to slow down. My mind becomes clear. For a few moments, nothing is moving. My mind is free, resting. I now return with clarity.
Welcome back. That was Sister Genty from the Brahma Kumaris on Relaxing My Mind on the CD Just a Minute. Today we're proud to welcome Michelle Galen, national CBS News anchor turned positive psychology researcher. She's also the best-selling author of Broadcasting Happiness. Michelle is the founder of the Institute for Applied Positive Research and holds a Master of Applied Positive Psychology from the University of Pennsylvania. She's an executive producer of the Happiness Advantage special on PBS and a featured professor in Oprah's Happiness Course. Her research and advice have received attention from the New York Times, Washington Post, Forbes magazine, CNN, Fox, and even the Harvard Business Review. Today we're honored to welcome Michelle Galen to the America Meditating Radio. Hi, Michelle. Happy New Year.
Hi, Happy New Year. Thank you so much for having me.
So nice to be with positive people, huh?
Definitely.
Do you think they're in an abundance right now, or are we really searching really hard to find them?
my hope is they are out there, and I see glimmers of beautiful, bright light everywhere we go. I think, though, unfortunately, the messages that are being broadcasted right now make us think that things are worse off than they actually are. We absolutely have challenges in this world, but I do believe that there are people that are holding optimism in their mindset, hope, and the belief that if we band together and apply our behavior and take real action, we can make a better tomorrow.
I get that. Michelle, you left your job as a broadcaster to study positive psychology. And I can only imagine what was going on in your consciousness on a day-to-day basis, where something within you must have been sensing, like, I don't know if this is really for me anymore. And then you went to the University of Pennsylvania to study positive psychology. You know, why did you choose to go into the area of positive psychology? And what were you going through internally when you made such a dramatic shift from being a broadcaster in the news?
Yeah, my friends thought I was crazy to leave a job that I worked so hard to get. And, you know, it was an amazing opportunity. I anchored two national news programs. If anyone was up early in the morning, I was the host of the CBS Morning News. But the unfortunate reality was, while I got into the business originally to help inform people, give them the information they need to move them in a positive direction, felt like I was doing it, you know, at that time, was constantly repeating over and over negative news stories. And the problem was so much that the stories focused on the negative, it's that they largely only focused on the negative. We didn't talk about solutions or what people could do. There was very little focus on inspiring stories of people who had overcome challenges before. And so I became very interested in this science of how to create a mindset that's resilient, optimistic, empowered, hopeful, as opposed to what I was feeling in myself and I was seeing in many of the viewers that reached out, which is they were feeling helpless and hopeless in the face of this barrage of negative news. When we came across positive psychology as a field, the scientific study of happiness and human potential, I was hooked, and so I applied to the Penn program there. I actually left my job at CBS before I knew for sure that I had been accepted, just kind of a leap of faith, but it was the best move for me personally, and I feel as if now I can talk about the kind of information that actually is much more helpful to the collective consciousness of the world.
I can imagine what your friends thought and what you were thinking when you had let go of your job to go into something that you had nothing about. It's really not only a leap of faith, but I think, you know, in answering to that honest part of you, and no one's supporting us, but you answer that and you just feel in your gut, this is my call, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. You did research on what it means to be resilient, which argued against resilience being synonymous with toughing it out. How should we define resilience, and what does this mean for how we can recharge ourselves?
You know, oftentimes we have this concept of resilience as the soldier who keeps on going, or the business professional who doesn't take a break and works really long hours. But the reality is, a huge part of resilience that we often forget is this piece that allows us to recharge and refresh our minds, our bodies, and then return to whatever work we're doing in a better state. So we looked at this concept of not just enduring, but recharging and setting aside time to do that, and how that can actually fuel your performance at work, or, you know, as a teacher or a professional, whatever the work you're doing, it actually makes you better when you return.
Could you share a few maybe steps or techniques in which folks can capture for recovering their energy from a workday, like a regular workday, during the workday? Some steps that we can take to be more resilient, to have more energy by the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we just published an article just this week on in Harvard Business Review, looking at some of the things you can do to help someone else, and in particular I looked at helping your spouse or partner, but really this is something you can do for yourself too. They're feeling stressed, and you know, work seems to be taking over. How do you rebuild and recharge and set aside those times? And some of the pieces of advice that we talked about, and this is all based on research, was
to, you know, hold a stakeholders meeting. So everyone at home who is affected by yours or your partner's levels of stress, to really sit down and talk about what you would like the evenings, let's say, or weekends to look like at home. What's the culture that we want to create? Oftentimes what happens is the work culture is such a dominating factor in our lives that it also dictates our home culture. And we, therefore, are sitting at the dinner table with our phones answering work emails. We never give our brain a chance to shut off. And so how can we give ourselves that opportunity? So if you hold a stakeholders meeting, and so this is even your five-year-old, you know, that might be able to contribute to this conversation, talk about what you would like the culture at home to look like. And the more we strengthen our positive culture at home, the better off for allowing ourselves to rest and recharge. I also advocate taking time from when we get home and through dinner time, which is a really sacred time, right? It's the first time you're seeing someone else at home. You're sharing your days. You're breaking bread together. I think that that's a wonderful piece of time to say, no work. And just putting the phone aside and then getting good sleep. I know it sounds so simple, but there was this fantastic study done that where people were exposed to a list of positive words and negative words, and then half the group was allowed to sleep for 5 hours, the other half was allowed to sleep for 8 hours. And the ones that were only allowed to sleep for 5 hours, they actually remembered 80% of the negative words, but significantly fewer positive words. Meanwhile, the folks that were allowed to sleep for 8 hours, they remembered the same amount of negative words, but they also remembered significantly more positive words. So if we want to encode positive memories in our brain and allow our brain to see that our reality is actually filled with incredible things we can be grateful for, the meaning in our work, then we just need that a little bit more sleep oftentimes.
I get that. Well, we started out our conversation a little bit about the complexity of these times and what it must have taken in terms of a toll on your emotional, mental, physical make with all the negativity that sometimes journalists have to cover. And now more than ever, not only are journalists being called to be as truthful, integrous, and authentic as they could possibly be, but also the public. I think they're struggling with what to listen to, what to watch, because we do need to stay updated so that we are vigilant and aware of what's going on. But at the same token, we also get affected by the angst that comes through some of the coverage that's focused on, that's coming from the news. Any ideas of what people can do to still stay informed but to prevent the news from negatively impacting them? Because they talk about it at work. We talk about it after we say hello. We talk about it at dinner. We talk about, you know, there's just so everything now comes in the comments. Did you hear what happened today? It's just so tiring. And I think it was just 2 days ago, I was so inspired to just write a very short piece on write the names of the people you think and speak about that really inspire you. And think and speak of no one else that doesn't do that for you. And see how that would make you feel. I know that worked for me the other day. So any advice for our listeners? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. I do love that, because what you speak about is what dictates your life oftentimes and the energy that you feel. The two major channels, it's what you talk about and what you think about. And news, as you know, to your point, it's fuel for those two channels. So what I would say is, first of all, I think getting the news online is a wonderful place to do it. We want to stay informed. We can't bury our heads in the sand. We don't know about the world's challenges or challenges in our community or facing our families. We can't do anything about it, right? So it is important to stay up on what's happening. When we get our news online, it gives us the power to click on a story or not. So if we see a headline that's about a car crash where someone was killed, oftentimes I say, don't actually read that story. The reason is that there's no significance to our personal lives unless you know the person, unless it happened down the street, unless it's not traffic for, you know, thousands of people on the first rise in LA, right? Otherwise, what we're doing is, and in a non-heartless way, where we are exposing our minds to this tragedy and filling our brains with that information. So the kinds of stories that I think actually good for us in terms of our mindset and fueling optimism are ones that might start out with a challenge, either a personal story or something going on in our community, but they go somewhere from there. So either it's someone overcoming a challenge, how did they do it, what was the process, what you're talking about, finding those inspiring people, or it's a challenge, but the journalist has gone on to explain potential or actual solutions. So I did a series of studies with Ariana Huffington and my research partner and husband, Sean Acor, and what we looked at was the implications of filling your mind just with negative news versus this more solutions-focused news. What we found is 3 minutes of negative news in the morning can increase your chances of having a bad day by 27%, and that's as reported 6 to 8 hours later. So you've already gone through your day and you're still feeling the effects. Meanwhile, if you flip the formula, instead of having this poison pill in the morning, we start to focus our brain on stories that are solutions-focused, that are inspiring. We found that people there experienced a significant increase in mood, so they felt better. But more importantly, their creative problem solving went up by 20% on subsequent unrelated tasks. So if we think about those subsequent unrelated tasks being the things we're doing at work or the conversations we're having with people, then the best thing we can do for ourselves is focus our brain on the moment in which our behavior matters, the ways in which we can create positive change, how positive change is possible in the world, even amidst all these problems, and that actually primes our brain for higher levels of performance and ultimately a better day.
Very powerful. Stress is high. It connects to what you're sharing a little bit. And your study found that a whopping 91% of us could be dealing with stress much better. What does that look like? How do we deal with stress effectively? I mean, is there an effective means of stress? For me, Michelle, I can handle whatever you offer. However, if I'm emotionally not in a good place, or if I've emotionally allowed something outside to enter my consciousness that perhaps touches some narrative in me that I haven't reconciled, it's just too much to bear. And I've observed this in my own journey. Like, I'm not stressed if I'm in a very emotionally strong place. But I found that my stress factor increases tremendously if I'm just emotionally not feeling good. So I'm curious to hear what your studies have shown and what it actually looks like. How can we deal with stress effectively, if it's possible?
Well, when our study found that 91% of us could stress better, I said, everyone keeps talking about this 1% that you want to be in, but I just would like to be in this 9%. I feel much better. What we found was that it's along three dimensions. We're trying to test not so much what you're stressing about, right? Because it matters less what we are actually worrying about. What matters more is how we respond to it when we're trying to predict our levels of performance or happiness or connection down the road. And so we found it fell along three dimensions, which is, do we stay cool in the face of a challenge, or are we becoming emotionally riled up, right? If something happens in the morning, are we still feeling the effects later on in the day? Do we talk to a couple people that we trust to get advice when we need it, or are we on either end of the spectrum, which is, are we bottling it up and not talking to anyone, or are we talking to a million of our friends and basically rehashing and reliving this experience over and over and over throughout the day? And then the third one is, do we stay stuck ruminating? This is the one I fall into sometimes. Do we ruminate about the challenge, or do we say, okay, well, I got to think through this, I have to understand this, but very quickly I want to get to the place where I'm creating an action plan and I take that first step? So we can intuitively understand which areas are better to where we want to fall into. And what we found is the folks that are scoring well in all three dimensions, that's the 9%. The rest of us have one, two, or three dimensions that we could improve. The good news is our response stress is habitual. We can absolutely improve upon it. It just takes conscious attention, like anything. And so what we found is that it's best to, for instance, talk to one or two trusted confidants about a situation that you are
experiencing, the reason why this is good is that you are creating connection with other people, and social connections, the greatest predictor of long-term levels of happiness that we have in the research. So definitely do not bottle it up. Make, you know, if you start feeling yourself getting stressed, make that phone call, send that text message and say, hey, I need to connect. And as much as we can stay calm, that's great, but really we need to provide our brain with facts to help it see that we are actually good and have a great track record at overcoming challenges. So what I always recommend is write down 5 stressful events that you've gone through over the course of your life, and you've overcome them, and you've moved through them fine. So an example would be someone breaks up with you, blindsided you, you didn't realize it was going to happen, right? And it definitely was hard when it happened, but then you did it. You eventually felt better. Maybe now you're married with 3 kids and it's great and everything. So write down 5 of those experiences, because those shape who we are. And then make sure when we're finding ourselves ruminating to create an action plan. And it doesn't have to be this huge detailed action plan. The key is actually to find the smallest meaningful action we can take. I call it the now step. What's your now step? What's the smallest thing you can do right now to solve a challenge? You need money to buy a car? Okay, can you put in an application for a job? Or can you save a couple bucks by buying a basic coffee instead of a fancy coffee? Those small steps give our brain a win, and then hopefully it helps propel us to take the next step and the next to move ourselves to a solution.
Very good. Before I close our conversation, I think every one of us have those folks in our lives that are those special moments that we can call opportunities. Whenever they emerge, our blood starts to curl and our skin just oof. And your chest gets heavy and you just smile at them like, hi, how are you? But, you know, deep down you're like, oof, God, you know, this person really gets them. So, you know, looking at definitely your workplace, let's say, for example, you're 8 or 9 hours there. Nowadays it's almost 10. And you can't get away from the person, your cubicle or the office next door. It could be your boss. It could be your supervisor. There's always that person in your life, or 2 or 3 or 5 or 10. And not only do you not feel very positive, but you could sense there is a lot of negative vibrations in their presence. In other words, you're picking up their thoughts. I believe when I pick up your vibe, I'm also picking up a lot of private thoughts that you've been having, or maybe public thoughts that you've been having, and I'm not quite sure if it supports the energy field that I wish to be in. So we've got these, what we would call negative folks in our world. Any strategies for handling those folks? Because we don't want to be stressed out at a job that's paying us money to pay our mortgage and to pay our bills. And just because of that one person, many folks have told me, I just want to leave the job. Just because of that one person, I want to leave the job. Any strategies for our listeners in which they can move into 2018 with more conviction and positivity?
Well, first of all, this is literally the most common thing I'm asked about when I go out to speak at companies and share the research, because we all have that, especially that one negative person, and oftentimes over the course of our lifetime, it's more than one. The key with this is to not just focus on the power that they seem to have over our mindset, but to also simultaneously remember the power that you can have over their mindset. So I think it's twofold. It's when they start to talk about something negative, and oftentimes it's something you've probably heard before or something similar, to not engage in that conversation, to as politely and kindly and lovingly as possible move to another topic. Do whatever you can to shorten that experience for you, because it's obviously clearly not working, right? It's not beneficial. But the other thing is, to remember that this person is just one data point in your entire life. And what I mean by that is, while they might seem to weigh so heavily on our mindset, our happiness, our mood, there are a lot of other people oftentimes at the office that are wonderful and positive. We just need to remind our brain about that. Our brains are incredible processors. We can process 40 to 50 bits of information every second of the day. The challenges from all of our nerve endings were bombarded by 11 millions of information. And so what that means is there are choices. And if our choices are, we're first focusing on the hassles, complaints, problems, challenges, and these negative people, then we're literally not leaving our brain resources to see the meaning in our work, the things we're grateful for, the wonderful other people at the office, So what I say is, if you shorten the connections with those negative people and the opportunities for them to dump their negativity on you, then what ends up happening is you're freeing up time where you can consciously, meaningfully connect other people. So a very practical strategy, and I do this, I've done this for periods of time in my life every single day, and now when I need a reboot, I do this. Start your day by writing a 2-minute email praising or thanking someone you know. So pick someone new and different each day. It could be a friend, family member, colleague, your old track coach, which I've written him a note, and just 2 minutes to tell them why you appreciate them, what positive impact they've had on your life, something that they've done recently that has just absolutely been wonderful. The reason why this is so powerful is that it's meaningfully activating your social support network. It's reminding your brain of people that love and care about you. And ultimately, it's building higher levels of social support, which we talked about, the greatest predictor of happiness. What that'll do is that drowns out that negative signal from that negative person by filling your brain with all the positive people in your life.
Right. It makes sense. Doesn't it, Michelle? It's so simple, but yet we still make it so complex. And there are times I just say to myself, what is it? Your solution is just to smile, let it go, have a positive thing, think about positive people. But yet the soul just emerges something very, very charged, you know, something very, very negative. And we feed into that same vibration. Would you say it's safe to say that this really is a time for us to take care of ourselves and be really truthful about how we treat ourselves in order for us to come forward with some of the simple steps that you just mentioned in our conversation? Because it doesn't make any sense. 1 and 1 is 2, not 11. So why aren't we just fulfilling the formula, right?
Yeah, and the other thing I think is important to remember is that really when someone is expressing negativity by complaining or bringing everyone down, this is really just expressed suffering. They're suffering with something. And so if we can hold compassion in our hearts, then that diminishes their power. And then that allows us to hopefully then create a positive feedback loop with them. If we send them compassion, send them love, even just silently, then hopefully that benefits them as well.
Sounds great. It's been wonderful having you on the air today. Please leave us with any final remarks and a website in which people can find out more about your work.
Oh, sure. Yes, I invite anyone to join me. The easiest one to remember is broadcastinghappiness.com, and there they can find stress responder scale. You can test yourself. It's 30 questions, very easy, free, and a handful of other resources, which I hope will be helpful. I'm passionate about positive psychology and what it can do for us, and so my hope is that anyone interested will learn more about it and then hopefully try some of the habits and strategies we've been able to research that we found effective.
Michelle Galen, thank you so much for joining us on the air, and let's keep broadcasting happiness.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. So some very simple steps that Michelle offered us, and I think it really is timely. Happiness is nourishment, and if we're not in that state, then what's happening to our minds, ourselves, relationships, our finance, everything. And so just some simple steps for learning more about happiness or just being in a place of happiness. So you can go to broadcasthappiness.com or to Michelle Galen, GIELAN.com. I've followed her on Twitter, and I do love some of her tweets. So that might be also a good way of keeping up with Michelle. Hope you've enjoyed our conversation today. I did. Just remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And let's start to love each other the same. Come on, the news is getting so old. The stories are getting so old. And if we keep listening to them, it will make our faces look so old. All right, Here's the Rose by Kristen Hoffman. Don't forget to get a copy of my Inclusion Revolution Together with Love Meditation Groove CD to keep increasing your happiness. Take care, everyone.
Up. got my light inside, but now I'm holding a new sun, and I know this life has just begun.